Okay, so I have been watching a lot of Little People, Big World lately. I know that's like an extreme throwback, but there are new seasons.
Wow.
I know.
Okay, I just want to say one time my cousin Josh and I on Thanksgiving, it was like of Thanksgiving, I feel like people, like the extended family was coming later or whatever. I don't know. But at some point, like he and I were really like the only kids around, you know, the kid. I mean, we were both like in college, but like we were the kids.
Yeah.
And we watched a Little People Big World marathon like aggressively together. And it was honestly, it was a great time and facilitated a lot of conversation. So that's the first thing I think of when I hear of this show is like the Thanksgiving that I watched like 12 hours of that show with my cousin.
It's very easy to watch a ton of it. And also like, it's such a fun show. And like, I would like what I like about the show is like that they live on this beautiful farm in Oregon.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
And yeah. like they have like a pumpkin farm and they do a pumpkin season every year, like every weekend.
The son Jeremy, I remember being kind of hot.
He's also like insufferable, but that's like for me to talk about a different time because I could really go off about it anyway.
Okay. All right.
I mean, like he's fine. He seems like he's like an amicable guy, but like he has like some strange religious views. It's fine. I'm going to just leave it right there.
Leave it right there.
Anyway,
we'll leave it right there. Jamie's unpacking some religious trauma. Go on.
Okay, so I'm not going to tell you all the things that I love about Little People, Big World, but it's a very good show anyway.
Of which there are many, we've decided. Okay,
but they say a lot of words wrong and frustrated. Like the mom says that. I don't think that Matt, the dad's, I think he says frustrated, but like the mom and most of the kids say
just like omit frustrated. The R.
Yeah, just like just fully skip it. And it's not like a speech impediment or anything. Like they fully say R's in other words. But there was one scene where like the dog is chewing on something and the teen daughter, Molly, is like, oh my God, like I can't remember the dog's name, like Rocky has a water bottle, like we need to get him a toy. And she goes over to like remove the water bottle from the dog's mouth. And she says, it's not even a water bottle. It's Parmesan cheese.
Parmesan. Oh my God.
And it like,
my God. I mean, shout out to the dog eating the Parmesan, but like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Oh my God, that's my favorite Parmesan.
And I've heard people when I was working in a pizza restaurant, like a few random guests said it like that. And
ask for Parmesan.
Yes. And I didn't understand right away what they meant.
You were like Parmesan.
Oh my God.
It makes me think of like Pythagorean for whatever reason. I'm like, that sounds like a Parmesan sounds like a math word or something.
It does. It does.
Oh my gosh. But you know, we can't like, you know, kettle pot black, right? So I mean,
well, that's what I was going to say. I got a lot of words wrong for a lot of my life. Did you want to put them on blast? I don't know if you're about
to
do
that.
I'll
put a couple. I'll do two that are coming to mind, and you tell me if you want to add any others. But for a long time, you thought the word garage, like I park my car in the garage, was just garage. Which that's a favorite one. And then one of my other ones is like the word album, like the record album, or I'm looking at a photo album was album. And I always thought that one was the weirdest one for you to get wrong because just like you're like from a family of musicians, you're a musician, you're like very into music and you are mispronouncing the word album for, I mean, more than a decade.
I was in like middle or high school when I found out about that one.
I think
you were
in high school.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But my grandma wrote like one time on a note, she said something about like a mirror and she wrote Miro, like M-I-R-R-O. And then like my family was like, what the fuck? Did she just like not finish it? And we asked her about it.
Did she get interrupted?
And she was, she was like, no, that's how you spell that. Mira. And we were like, wait, what?
Oh, mirror. Instead of mirror, mira. Oh, that's good.
That one's my favorite.
Oh my God, that's so good. Wait, is there anything that you remember that I like really mispronounced? I feel like I can think of things I like didn't know what they meant that are like obvious.
I think more about like the words that you shortened, like
biz. Like that I would say biz instead of because.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go to the store because I need some cheese.
Exactly. It was almost like there was verbal shorthand. I don't know why I did that. It was just like your brain moving really fast and preteen stuff.
I don't know.
But I think that maybe you didn't get as many words wrong as me, maybe for the same reasons as like I think that I've classically gotten song lyrics more incorrect than you, just like over the years. I feel like I have a harder time like understanding what people are saying.
My favorite one of yours was when you thought TLC's Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls was Go Go Jason Wonderful. That's a good still one. My favorite.
Another good
or
one.
Or Bob Evans, Dead on the Farm, like instead of Down on the Farm. Mm-hmm. That's another great one.
Or Dreaming of
a I'm Dreaming Otherwise Christmas. Oh my that God, that's my favorite.
Though. Like that one tracks. Wait. It makes sense for the song.
Well, the Dead on the Farm also, I just want to explain these to the listeners for a real quick moment. So Bob Evans' Dead on the Farm stems from when people in the late 90s, early aughts would be like, oh man, that dude looks dead on like Jason Schwarzman. It was like, that's exactly like. And so you were like, Bob Evans, it's Dead on the Farm. Like, it's exactly like the farm. And then...
It would be such like a young man's like campaign at the time.
100%. And then I'm Dreaming Otherwise Christmas instead of I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas is what's happening right now is so good that either I'm dreaming or it's fucking Christmas. And that one is arguably the best. Like, dude, life is so good. It's either a dream or it's fucking Christmas, which, if anything, says how you felt about Christmas as a child.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I guess also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Yeah, welcome. Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast. So.
It's basically an SVU episode with help from talking rats.
This month in December, please stop douching your genitals. Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it. I'm like, who's that guy?
So it fit like a tiny belly shirt with like cap sleeves. And when the ambulance came, like that's what he was wearing.
You're saying all sorts of crazy shit now.
I'm gonna peak in high school and then die.
I do believe in fairies. I do. It's franchising our platform. We're franchising it, okay? Oh, welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where these opening segments just get longer and longer and related to less and less relevant information. But, you know, this is where we noodle on psychology, pseudoscience, pop culture, misquoted song lyrics, whatever we're feeling at the moment in order to determine why people are the way that they are. And, you know, either I'm dreaming, otherwise Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles is on the other end of this phone. Those are my options. That's a compliment, okay?
And either it's an imposter who's dead on or it's Austin on the other line in Chicago. That was a weak fumble. I'm really sorry. Just trying to do the other one. You know.
Either the person that I'm talking to sounds dead on like Austin or it could be her.
I mean, you could be an imposter, I guess.
What if one time, oh my God.
Like an Avril Lavigne situation.
Wait, how does that have to do with Avril
There's
Lavigne?
That conspiracy theory that like Avril Lavigne like disappeared or like checked out of her life or died like in the mid early
I've never
thousands,
heard this. I've
and that her
never heard
best
this.
Friend Melissa has been posing as Avril ever God. Since.
Wow. I mean, I'm not Melissa.
I don't want to will anything else into existence, actually.
This is
so I
really
feel like we
me.
Need to tiptoe back from this because I don't
yeah,
want
this
to happen.
Yeah, this is me. I'm not an imposter. There, it's always been me. Thank and you. It's always been Jamie that I am aware of.
Anyway.
Listen, we can't derail on like a literal imposter syndrome where like you're afraid the person you're talking to isn't really who they
are. Oh my God, yeah.
Wow. I want to know if anybody in Avril's life is like bought into like, maybe it's Melissa.
Maybe Chad Kruger. Maybe he thinks he was married to Melissa.
What about, you know, when she was dating Brody Jenner? That was a personal
that would
weird,
be a Melissa
favorite relationship
also.
Of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, Melissa. Melissa and Brody.
It would be if Melissa is a thing, that would be when that was happening. It would have already started.
Okay. I mean, that's another episode that I honestly, I don't know. Maybe I want to talk about this conspiracy of Avril another time.
It's a fun
at
one.
At length.
Yeah, we could dive.
We'll keep you posted on people posing as their friends. Oh, wow. Actually, I'm interested in that. Just found that away. We're workshopping things live. But that's not what we're talking about today, tonight, good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening to this. Today, I would like to dive into satisficing and maximizing. Dun, dun, dun.
And I don't know what that first word is.
I love it. And you probably don't know what maximizing is in this context.
Surely
psychologically.
I do not.
Sure, but that one's like a little bit more intuitive. So let's just like jump in with a little Wikipedia juju. I'm excited because usually you bring to the table things that I'm like, I really have never heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is this my first time of like coming to the table with something that you're like, this is totally new?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, how exciting. Yeah. You guys, the student becomes the teacher. Okay. So, satisficing is a decision-making strategy or cognitive heuristic that entails searching through the available alternatives until an acceptability threshold is met.
Oh, God.
So, the term satisficing is kind of a hybrid of satisfy and suffice mm-hmm. linguistically,
mm-hmm.
and it was introduced by Herbert A. Simon in 1956, although the concept was first kind of proposed in his 1947 book, Administrative Behavior, which sounds
wow,
a
like
snooze. A sexually charged
oh.
office movie made in the 70s.
Oh.
Administrative behavior. Can't you see it?
It does. That's great.
Okay. Thank you. So Simon used satisficing to explain the behavior of decision makers under circumstances in which an optimal solution cannot be determined.
Mm.
So he maintained that many natural problems are characterized by computational intractability or a lack of information.
Mm-hmm.
So both of these kind of preclude the use of any sort of mathematical optimization procedures. We're talking about scenarios okay. where you can't be like, well, you know, if we multiply X on this assembly line
right.
or whatever, and this is the most productive, like the number we can make in an hour is 487 if everything is perfect. Like we can't
There's
do that
no
for these
number
kind
crunching.
Of questions. 100%. And this guy, he's a Nobel Prize winner in economics. So interesting, right?
Okay.
But he observed in his Nobel Prize speech that decision makers can satisfice either by finding optimum solutions for a simplified world or by finding satisfactory solutions for a more realistic world.
Hmm.
Neither approach, in general, dominates the other, and both have continued to coexist in the world of management science.
Mm.
Da-da-da-da-da. So Simon formulated the concept within a novel approach to rationality,
mm-hmm.
which posits that the kind of rational choice theory is an unrealistic description of human decision processes and calls for psychological realism.
Mm.
So real quick, what is rational choice theory? Rational choice theory is what you experienced in every kind of entry-level economics lecture or course or anything you ever heard, that we've got supply and demand, and they say to you, assume that the market is rational.
Oh, they do. They do say
the market
that.
Is not rational. And there's actually a great book I'm a fan of called Predictably Irrational that just spends an entire book explaining all these supply and demand scenarios in which the market acts irrationally.
Yeah.
About how my personal favorite example due to basketball allegiances mm. is about, you know, how people who have like people who are ticket holders of Duke basketball tickets believe that they're valued more in an irrational way than people who don't have them. And I'm sure a bunch of other things qualify for this, that like you think things you already possess are worth more money. I kind of feel like that's the housing market anyway.
I was going to say that's absolutely the housing market.
Right. You know, I feel like there are a lot of things that fall into this, but essentially what he's throwing out there is, hi, this rational choice theory is totally an unrealistic description of how people make decisions, and calling for this psychological realism brings in my words and opinion, like the humanity of people and how we psychologically process things, because it's not just like, oh, supply goes up, mm-hmm. demand goes down. It's not that linear. It's not. But that's all you learn in kind of entry level econ, if that's your vibe.
Quick question. Psychological mm-hmm. realism, is that like that if I'm trying to say, like, I'm deciding if I want to buy like a stock or not, I would have to, like, to make a good decision, kind of be in like a very realistic, like non-emotional state of mind. Like, I would need to remove like any feelings that I have associated with like how that stock somehow reminds me of my grandpa and it makes me think it's higher value. Like, is a rational or like psychological realism, I guess, is that what that is?
So I think what you're describing is trying to make yourself more rational.
Yes.
Rather than like taking your emotions out. And psychological realism is, I know that it was like a genre in like fiction writing, and maybe that's a good example to mm-hmm. explain it, but it focuses on the motivations and the internal thoughts of the characters. So like, what you're describing as a way to combat like your own psychology, what psychological realism is, it's the opposite of this like rational assumption about people. It's the understanding that people aren't rational and that people have motivations and internal thoughts. It's not a strategy to combat them.
Okay. Okay. I got it now. Thank you.
You're welcome. So with that said, Simon, he kind of referred to his approach as bounded rationality. So some sequentialist theories in moral philosophy use the concept of satisficing in the same sense, though most call for optimization instead. So we've thrown around some words to juxtapose each other, but let's get into really where I think this fits in, and hopefully it'll be a way that breaks down satisficing more articulately and a little less clinically than giving you the background of our boy, Herbert A. Simon. And sure. I'm going to bring in some other psychiatrists and psychologists that I'm excited about. So basically, we're talking about, in a lot of senses, the disease of having more choices or something else to look forward to, or whatever you possess or whatever you're doing isn't enough, whether it's like your job, your free time, whatever. Maximizers are folks who are looking for the best option. Satisficers are looking for good enough. So let's get into that. So Barry Schwartz enters the chat. Welcome to the program, Barry.
Welcome.
We're going to spend some time with Barry. So Barry is an American psychologist, and he was, you know, born in like the mid 40s. So he's still kicking today. That puts him in his 70s, right? And he is a professor of social theory and social action at Swarthmore. I don't know why this word was so hard for me. I kept seeing it and being like, Swarthmore College. And since 2016, he's been a visiting professor at UC Berkeley. So his work focuses on the intersection of psychology and economics. Shout out back to our boy Simon, right? So he frequently publishes editorials in the New York Times, and he's applied his research in psychology a lot of times to current events. So Schwartz's research, it addresses morality, decision-making, and the interrelationships between behavioral science and society. So shit that's right up our alley, right? His books often criticize certain kind of philosophical roots of Western societies, right? And expose a lot of underlying myths common in both lay and academic psychological theories. In particular, he is a critic of the rational economic man, in quotes, if you will, right? He's a critic of that model in both psychology and in economics. So, over a decade ago, Barry, he published what might be the ultimate kind of psychological life hacking tome, and it's called The Paradox of Choice.
Oh.
Why More is Less.
I've heard of this.
Right. So in it, Schwartz argues that the modern world's smorgasbord of options, you know, brownie or bounty, Coke Zero or diet.
A food court.
Do you major in sociology or anthropology? Mm-hmm. It makes us less happy, not more happy. Choice overload, as he calls it, makes us question our decisions and set our expectations too high and then blame ourselves for our mistakes.
This is, I experience this frequently. Go on.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. So one of the studies that he partnered with some other psychologists on that I found particularly interesting was he got into examining college seniors looking for jobs. They did kind of like a survey with a bunch of statements to these college seniors, and maximizers agreed with the below statements. And I just, before I tell you maybe what those statements are, do you have like any initial feelings about maximizing and satisficing just about this best option versus good enough? Are you already trying to categorize yourself a little bit and thinking you're one or the other, or one is better? What would you say?
I think that a mix is probably ideal for everyone, but I think that I struggle a lot with like an attempt at maximizing and like coping with satisficing, if you will, because, or not because, but like I think this could be talked about in the terms of that, like on the Enneagram I test as a 7, which is like a person who is like gluttonous for experiences, maybe like always holding out for what could be like the best thing, like pursuing too many things at once because like you can't like let go of any of the options. And so I think probably me and a lot of other people who test as a 7 would say that we're trying to be maximizers like most of the time. Like we're wanting to have like whatever's like the best thing on the menu, or like trying to figure out like what we'll enjoy the most, or how we can like maximize like the use of our free time like at all times. But at least that's my experience. And
that makes sense.
It becomes really stressful. It's like this constant seeking of like I guess just like enjoyable experiences or like resources. And it's a feeling of like kind of maybe never being satisfied. And so that is frustrating. But for those reasons, I think that I like attempt to be a maximizer, maybe like sometimes to my own detriment. Like I think that I hold off on decisions and like measure 25 times before I cut because I'm like always worried about the maximizing.
Okay, okay.
Even, like, so, online orders, I, like, won't pull the trigger for, like, weeks sometimes because I'm like, well, what if I, like, change my mind and I actually, like, wanted the white one more? So, yeah.
Okay, okay. So, on this survey that they gave to these college seniors, maximizers agreed with these statements. When I'm listening to the radio and I hear a song I like, I keep scanning to see if something better is on.
Yeah.
I treat relationships like clothing. I expect to try on a lot before I find the perfect fit.
I don't know that I feel that way with people.
Do you relate to the radio thing?
I do relate to the radio thing. And I wonder if I don't relate as much to the relationships one because like a lot of my friends, like you and my other friends, I've been friends with for like 20 plus years. So I don't know if maybe like that one's just irrelevant for me, maybe. I don't know.
Do you feel like relationships, like in dating, do you feel like that's something though, that like you had inclinations at any given point in time that you felt like you would have a lot of them?
I don't think so. I think that I waited a long time to date because I didn't feel like anyone was like just right. Like I have like just right feelings about a lot of stuff. And I kind of was like, I don't really want to give.
Goldilocks.
Like I'm also like really protective of my time. And so I was like, I don't want to give time, but I'm like bad at managing it and like say yes to too many things. So that's like a weird other paradox. Anyway, I didn't.
So hearing these statements, you maybe feel still the same way you felt before I proposed them to you, that you're like, yeah, I feel like a little maximizey about some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like hold back on like doing something that I want because there might be something that I want more.
Okay. I feel like going into this, when I was kind of learning about this stuff initially, to me, I was like, a maximizer looking for the best option, like, sounds more positive than being like looking for good enough. And I'm like, you want to be those. And then actually it's interesting, with those statements, I like wholeheartedly don't like relate to the radio thing. Like if there's a song I like, I'm hyped, I've stopped. And the relationships like clothing, and a lot of this can too just be like where you are in life. I guess I don't know that I like, I feel like I've had like a fair amount of like, you know, period pieces of like friendships that have been like a year or two, and then like people go in their different directions. But then I also have like a fair amount of like long hauling friends. But I thought about it more when I read it, like about dating, and like I think I kind of do expect to try on a lot of people. Like I feel like I already have. And I feel like, I don't know, I'm someone who I feel like has had, for how old I am, like kind of a substantial amount of like, you know, 2-ish year relationships.
Yeah.
Which is like a chunk of time when you're 30, you know, 2 years is like not an insignificant investment. Yeah. So I was like, yeah. And I decided I like wasn't about it with any of those people. I'm like, yeah, I totally expect to like try on a lot of things if there is quote unquote a perfect fit. So that one I related to more. So it sounds like maybe categorically, maybe you are thinking more about like some personal experiences being more of a maximizer than maybe you are in like friendship and, but maybe a little bit in relationships, because you're like, I just like wasn't even gonna explore the option with people I was so on. Do you feel like there's like a certain like, are you looking at like specific categories or even like categories of goods if you're shopping for something, or like homes or like job search, that you're like, here, I'm a maximizer?
It's always such a delicate dance, because I feel like I'm balancing like multiple attempts at maximizing at the same time. And hear me out on what I mean here. So
okay,
I am going to use the weed example.
Oh,
so
marijuana has entered the chat. Go on. Okay.
So I live in California, and like dispensaries have a bevy of kinds of products for you. And
sure.
I recently discovered that there are like semi-local like farm cut batches that you can buy that are a lot more cost effective than what I would normally buy. And they come in like a greater bulk than what would normally be available otherwise. So I've like... Okay. Mostly switched over to this like bulk farm cut stuff. And I will say that like I don't like it quite as well. It's not as interesting. Like I think the most fun thing for me is to get like a little bit of like 10 kinds and like try them all and like take notes.
Okay. Yeah, sure. A weed diary. Go on.
But But that's like so much more expensive. And so I think that I'm...
Listen, I do this with wine, so heard.
Absolutely. And so it's, yes, I'm like satisficing, I guess, by like deciding that like the farm cut bulk weed is like good enough, because it's like almost the same as the other. And so like
that, and substantially cheaper.
Substantially cheaper, only a little bit not as good. So like that's the move, is to get that stuff most of the time.
You got a trade-off.
However...
It's good enough for you.
But I'm also like constantly trying to maximize my finances, like in the back of my head. And so like that ongoing maximizing like awareness, I think, bleeds into satisficing other things, if you will. So
I will.
Yes, I'm trying to maximize, but also like I'm trying to like maximize like my money experiences, et cetera. So it's a delicate dance of everything being locked together.
I think these are good things to like bring with us on this exploration, because you're like, yeah, like maybe I'm satisficing one thing so that I can maximize another. That's interesting. So we all maximize more in decisions that are important to us.
Sure.
Like Full stop. So everybody's doing
like I don't care what kind of trash bags I get. Like, get whatever the cheapest one that won't break is.
That, I mean, that could really matter to someone, you know?
That's so, true. That's true. I hate the scented ones, though. I told you that already.
Well, you've talked a lot about scented products on this podcast recently, and they're it seems that favorite. No one's really here for them. Yeah, but maximizers usually are defined by two things. One being impossibly high standards that, you know, they're looking for the best or the perfect choice. And two, in order to get there to that best or perfect choice, they have to consider as many options as possible.
It's overwhelm. It's analysis paralysis for everyone that has that.
So the data from these college seniors looking for jobs, right?
Oh, poor babies, yeah.
It showed that maximizers do better in the job search, that they get more offers and ultimately a higher salary.
That checks
out. It also showed that they're less happy with the job they end up with because they wonder about what else was out there or what could have been.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So with relationships, I think this is interesting, right? Because people are constantly evaluating if they've got the best option out there for them, like romantically.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's like somewhat of an illusion, or is it that there are people out there that are quote unquote better for them than like whatever relationship they're already in? And I feel like dating apps really facilitate this because the vibe of them is endless options.
One of them's literally called Plenty of Fish.
I mean, there are plenty of them. The fish are plentiful, you know? Which Schwartz are...
Unless you're a lesbian in the Midwest, in which case apps show you that your choices are like -3.
Two people. And you went to high school with one of them. Yeah.
Right. And one was your roommate who you weren't friends with freshman year of college.
Perfect. Those are the choices. Yeah. I mean, that's really real. And I think like certainly there are all sorts of circumstances and scenarios like dating for certain groups of people, like definitely I think feels way more limited, like geographically some places. And then also
but
I'm
overall,
sure there are
apps
other...
have shown that there's like more options than anyone knew, probably for most people.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like honestly, if you didn't have the app and you were just like a lesbian in the Midwest, would you think you were the only lesbian in the Midwest? Like maybe, I don't know. But I think there are other things like that, too, that you're probably limited a little bit, like, circumstantially in terms of your choices, like, just comparatively, like, across the board, right?
Yes.
But our boy Barry also says that, you know, the rise of social media, he's arguing, is really only heightened the agony of decision-making through phenomena like FOMO, or fear of missing out, right?
Yeah. Such increased FOMO.
I mean, like 100%, and all of this, like you know, could be doing X, Y, and Z, right?
You should be here. So, sorry, I had to.
Oh my god! I listen, guys.
That was an entire campaign built on FOMO.
Oh, I mean, I don't know where I was supposed to be.
You were supposed to be on a cruise, selling packages of cruises.
Okay, well, cruise, use yacht, my problem. You know.
Oh, good job.
Thank you. I'm bringing it full circle. So one of the things that I thought was super interesting, though, that gets called out about these maximizers is that they tend to forget about the idea of fit. Basically, that they shouldn't or can't really be looking for the best or / like perfect job, that they need to find the job that's like the best fit for me.
Right.
And they're walking around thinking that a perfect option does exist. And I thought about this, like, I think the first time I kind of encountered someone really spelling out for me that there's not a perfect choice was when I was in high school and, like, early junior year. And, you know, it's like, you know, where, like, people are starting to put out their, like, where am I going to college feelers, and you're looking at schools or whatever. And I don't remember if it was like a guidance counselor or a teacher or someone in some other circumstance, but I really remember someone being like, here's the thing. There's no such thing as a perfect school. Like, there's not a school that you're going to find that's going to be perfect.
You could be happy
so you have to, like, schools. 100%. And you have to, like, you know, make your choices and figure out what you want. And I remember being like, yeah, okay. Because for me, I remember at that time, like, I was, like, kind of thirsty to be in, like, a more, like, urban, like, mm-hmm. campus kind of vibe. So, like, I looked really hard at schools in Chicago, but I think I also really wanted that quote-unquote quintessential, like, college experience.
Yeah,
so,
like a little town.
Indiana, the big state school I went to, right? And, like, the college town vibes. Loved it, but I think, like, there was part of me that wanted to, like, have like a Big Ten school experience but somehow also be able to just like be in a city, and mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, you can't have both. No. And like maybe that would have been quote unquote my perfect, but like that didn't exist, right?
And I think you have to go to somewhere in LA,
right? You have to decide like what you want, and I wouldn't change anything about it, like Hoosiers. But do you feel like you had a moment of like ever in life where you kind of had like a there's no perfect option kind of epiphany?
Yeah, I honestly kind of felt that way after college about jobs. Like, I know that's like kind of a generic answer.
I don't think that's generic.
I honestly think that I've maybe kind of always felt that way about jobs. Like, there are a lot of things that I could do that I could be happy doing and things that I could find like creatively fulfilling.
Sure.
But I think that kind of not knowing what to like specifically pursue like caused me to put that off for a long time. I think that the knowledge that like I could probably like make a lot of different things work and like figure out a way to be happy in like multiple iterations of my life, like caused me to constantly weigh my options. I don't know. And so I guess, again, that's like a combination of like satisfying and like attempting to maximize. But
no, but I think that makes sense. And to me, I think that's a real like, it's not generic at all. It's that I feel like that's like a really specific and common experience, because I feel like millennial like generation vibes in general, it's all of this like your job needs to be your passion. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, I feel like I constantly am defending the fact that my job is not what like gets me excited to be awake mm-hmm. in the morning. And that when I say that, everybody wants to like figure out how to change my job to one of my hobbies. And I'm like, I'm really good. Like,
and
I'm
that's
not
interesting, like, generational
that.
Pressure that, like, I don't know. I feel like the opposite pressure, like, existed for older people.
Absolutely. That it was just, like, you need to provide for your family, boomer. Like, it wasn't, like, you need to find work you find personally fulfilling. Like, right. That wasn't happening.
Right. So, yeah, I think that I felt paralyzed about that, but also, like, kind of comfortable knowing that, like, somehow I would probably figure out how to be happy in, like, wherever I ended up. Maybe.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, and that's some satisfying
shit. But mostly
shit.
I was just like, I just need to figure out which area I'm going to be the luckiest in and go that way.
Oh, the luckiest. Okay.
Because if all of it will be fine, then I'd like to be where it's going to be the luckiest.
I mean, I'm not going to.
And I came out of school with like a BFA. Like, let's also talk about like what an open world it is when you graduate with a degree.
You know, with a BFA and a concentration in ceramics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mm-hmm. okay, I don't think that I want to move to like a rural town where I would be like a ceramic resident. And I don't know if I can make enough money as a ceramic artist to like live in a city. And so
right.
I kind of felt like that like eliminated that as like a career path. Like, I knew that ceramics was going to probably have to just be a hobby. And I like loved playing music, and I like didn't want to give up like any of my many passions. And so I was just like, cool, I'm gonna like wait tables for a while and like see which of these one passions kind of maybe starts to lead to something. And eventually that was like podcasting and like sound design stuff. But like, I never could have known when I graduated college that like that's where I would end up. I like, because like podcasts weren't even really a thing I was listening to yet, so I feel like I never could have known that I would get into like audio work that was not music. But I almost feel like if I hadn't just kind of had no idea, we would never have started this podcast.
I mean, that's fair. Like, that's really fair. Yeah.
Just a free floating agent. Go on.
Well, you know, just like some happenstance. And I feel like in some ways, like talking about satisficing and maximizing doesn't necessarily lend itself either one to a spontaneity. So that's something to
jot down. Oh, that's a really good point. And sometimes you just got to go where the energy is. Just, you know.
Just got to go where it takes you. Honestly. But I think the other thing, so that I guess, you know, outside of some of these like job choices that I do think is super interesting is kind of the thought about relationships, mm-hmm. which like are work and mm-hmm. there's no perfect like fit or person. And so,
you know, I feel maybe about arranged marriages.
Sure.
That and you can, I think if that, everyone's willing, that you can probably make it work with anyone, but you have to really, really be ready to talk to each other.
Yeah, I think there's some fairness to that, and I don't know. I'll pose some questions maybe on that as we get into it. But I think kind of the maximizer myth of, you know, relationships is the maximizers in this kind of relationship theory, right? If you're trying to maximize in romance and love or something, mm-hmm. you're thinking that the job is to find the perfect person instead of thinking that the job is building the best relationship that you can.
Yeah. And so if you're, you know, a fundamentalist Mormon, you can just get another wife when you realize that the first one sure. is maybe not optimal.
You know. You got to optimize. Yeah. So kind of to this point, though, I do want to, like, dig in. You're like, yeah, I think you could maybe make it work with anyone. Like, do you think you could love anyone?
I don't know that I would use the word love in, like it would be maybe, like, a lowercase L.
Okay.
I think that you can, like, barring, like, you're paired up with, like, a sociopath or something, I think, like, both parties have to be, like, completely dedicated to, like, making the marriage work for the rest of your lives and, like, talking about your feelings and, like, really figuring out how both of you can be the happiest. I think if that stays, like, the goal of all conversations, which, like, for people is really hard and, like, I don't think anyone could actually do that. But I think that if you could, then yeah, I think you could kind of be married to anyone. It wouldn't be like your absolute best life, but like it would be okay, I think. Like,
do you feel like it would be more okay if you were like apocalyptically like the last people on earth?
Yes, because then you wouldn't be distracted by choices, right? You'd be like, mm-hmm. well, I'm very lonely and like this person is here and they're like willing to like hear my preferences on things. So that's good enough.
I mean, honestly, well, that's the thing. I kind of think about this when I think about the show Lost, which,
oh my
yes,
God.
Did jump a shark at some point. But like,
it was fun
if anyone watched that, well, I just think about like, would any of these people have like been into each other if they had had more options?
Well, there's a reckoning about that when they go back. Like some of them are.
I didn't get that far. I stopped watching when it got weird.
Because in like the quote, like real world, like they're in very different like socioeconomic groups and stuff. Yeah.
Right. Hurley worked at like a fast food chain or something.
And then he won the lottery. But then he had that lottery luck. And then his plane crashed. Yeah.
And then people were like, did you crash this plane? Wow, Lost. It's all coming back to me. But I think about that. And we had like this real kind of weird love triangle with Kate and like Jack, but also Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, would you have liked either one of these people? And the correct answer for anyone who's trying to date a straight man out of the Lost cast is Saeed. Anyway,
he was my choice. Dated Sawyer in real life.
I would have dated both. John Locke, honestly. I mean...
Yikes.
I love John Locke.
He looks
I love
like
John
a
Locke and Sawyer.
Tropical bird.
Or not Sawyer, Saeed. Saeed was my favorite.
He was in the English.
But he was also like kind of a war criminal.
He was.
So like,
yeah, but he didn't,
you know.
Well, I don't know. He had a
he didn't
want to
be.
Backstory.
I trusted his heart.
Complicated backstory.
Listen,
as a torturer.
Stuff with his wife. It was hard. He would have been my hookup on the island.
Your ideal,
but like,
yeah.
I would have been really happy in like a benevolent partnership with John Locke.
Okay, that's fine.
I also really like that they worked his, like, own scars into the show.
Like when people do that.
He had a facial scar that they made it look like he got in the plane crash, but that's just really the actor's face.
There was also, this is the last thing I'm going to say about Lost, but there was also a weird episode.
We can't derail about Lost, but we can.
That explained Matthew Fox, the actor who plays Jack, has, like, some Asian symbol tattoos, like, on his shoulder.
Oh, yeah, he has bad tattoos.
And they did.
Bad tattoos.
Like, those are really his tattoos. And they did, like, an explanation episode where he was, like, in the red light district in Tokyo. And it was very
stupid.
It was a lot. And I feel really sure that it didn't hold up.
Yeah. I feel like I vaguely remember this. And I'm just, like, I'm just always scared when white people are like, you know what? I'm not Japanese at all, but let me put some Japanese symbols and words on my, like, I have a lot of questions. It's a weird move. We're not here
to figure
that out today.
Did you feel,
what? Go ahead.
So, like, first tattoos are really hard because it's like this permanent commitment, and like people like him and haw about their first tattoo in a way that they don't in like the later ones a lot of times.
Oh.
Because you've kind of like broken the seal. However, did you feel like the first one that you got had to be like perfect or like exactly right? Or did you change your mind a bunch of times? Like,
I really did not hem and haw about it. I mean, I'll say this, like, I have 3 tattoos. They're all small. I'm like a queen of a shop minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like very certain. I know, like, I'm like, let me get these something really tiny in exclusively black ink on my, I mean, they're not, one of them's really tiny, the rest are, you know, but one of them's tiny because it's on my finger.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have still few enough tattoos and they're all small right now that, like, I do feel thoughtful about everything that I put on my body.
I still feel
more than
thoughtful.
Some other people I know, where other people are just like, I don't know. Like, I let my brother give me the stick and poke. It sounded fun. But I don't. I just was very sure about what my first tattoo would be. Not, like, exactly, but I just, like, knew what it would be about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just knew I was going to do something in relation to my family. Like, mm-hmm. I just knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all who are curious, I have my parents' wedding anniversary. That's the first tattoo I ever got. But
I don't remember that.
It does not say that. That's not on my body. It's numeric, but Jesus Lord. But I really don't remember hemming and hawing about that. Do you feel like you felt very like maximizy about your first tattoo?
I think I felt maximizy about, I don't know, like I went back and forth about like when to get it done or like where to go and like wanting to have like the best possible experience. But I didn't really hem and haw about the actual tattoo because it was kind of like there were many different tattoos that I wanted like through my youth that I didn't get because like I didn't, it didn't feel like a good use of money really ever at the time. And so like finally when I was like, okay, I can like afford one right now, like then I just got the one that I wanted at the time. So I did not, but I definitely like, late college, I feel like everyone's like really into getting tattoos. And I know like pretty
for
much
sure.
Most of my roommates would be just like drawing like different designs or like each week they would be like, I think maybe I'll get this tattoo. Like, no, actually, I think I want to get this one. And so like planning to get one while like choosing what it is still was like something that I saw a lot of. So I don't know. I just think that's interesting because people like really did. I watched them go back and forth forever about it, but it is like a permanent decision. But then I'm like, you could also just get both of those tattoos eventually, or you could be polygamous and you could marry both of those women.
I mean, I will say to our credit, both of us, and I was somehow like down a old tweet rabbit hole the other night, and did come across tweets from when we were in Nashville and both spontaneously got tattoos together. So
yeah, we got Mexican food, of course we did, and we were like,
and then we were like, should we get tattoos right now?
Yep. And we had to like Google what shop was open, and we went
there.
We
were just like, where can we go right now and for a walk-in? Yeah
Did we stay at the
and
Hojo?
I was like, I did not stay at a Hojo.
I can't remember where we stayed.
It wasn't a Hojo. Oh my god. That was really a time.
I stayed in
a Hojo
once there, though.
I know you did.
Yeah.
God bless. Shout out to Hojo. Anyway.
Speaking of satisficing, Hojo will
speaking of satisficing
your savings
and lost and tattoos, you know, bringing it back. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, some of this. We've talked a lot about, like, maximizing, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, to this point, let's talk a little bit more about satisficers.
Yeah.
So, yes, they're essentially the opposite of maximizers, right? And do you feel like this sounds shitty in some ways or, like, a worse way to be? Because I think a lot of folks hear satisficer and think, well, you have low standards.
Yeah, I do think that people think that. I would say, though, that, like, it's just like I'm a satisficer about shit that I don't really prioritize, like about my car consistently or like technology. Like I don't really care if I have like the newest, like insert literally any technology that I don't specifically need for work.
Sure.
Like I just don't care. Like I'm using like the oldest monitor in the world because I just like keep putting off getting a new one. So like in those areas, like I do have kind of low standards, but like,
okay.
I don't know if it matters because I'm like, I save a lot of money in the long run by like not repeatedly buying like monitors and speakers.
Mm-hmm. Maximizing that money.
I don't know. But yeah.
Reoccurring theme.
It is low standards. And I will say though that then like sometimes that is a little bit embarrassing. Like I was like embarrassed in front of my coworkers at first to not have AirPods, like to have like wired headphones. And I didn't have them. I didn't not have them like because I couldn't afford them. I just like hadn't ever ordered them. Like, previously couldn't have afforded them, but I did feel like concerned that they would like judge me for having low standards. So there definitely is something there.
Sure. Well, that's the thing though, because with satisficing, you don't have to have low standards to be a satisficer. You get to decide what's good enough for you. And maybe like the key to balancing happiness and success might be to be a high standard holding satisficer.
Exactly.
So
yes.
You aim high and you're like ambitious in your goals. But once you find something that meets those standards, you're not going to like keep looking and wondering what might have been, you know?
And you can also, if it's something that's situational, like that you have somewhat like control over, like say like these freshly minted college graduates looking for a job. First of all, you're going to have a lot of jobs. So like that first job.
That was the best career advice I ever got was at like 21. My sister said to me, she says, whatever you do after school is like, you know, it's not the rest of your life.
You probably won't even be there that long.
I was like, oh my God, wow. Like what a relief. Like what a burden has been lifted.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's something that maybe our generation felt more intensely than people coming out of school now, because like people that like, I don't know, a lot of boomers did have the same job for forever after college. But now I think like it's becoming normalized that you have many jobs throughout your life. And like that just is how it is. But like I think that's a really good time. If you're like freshly coming out of college, if I could give myself advice at the time so that I would feel less paralyzed, I think I would say like, just get a job that you are kind of interested in and then like try to make yourself as happy as you can at that specific job. Because I think there's some entitlement in like maximizing where you think that like there's this thing that like exists that's perfect that requires no work from you. No, like in any job, you're going to have to kind of like scooch into your seat. Like you're going to have to make like a routine that works for you and like figure out like how you are best in that role. And so, you can really kind of optimize anything unless it's terrible, then you have to leave. But, I guess just like thinking like just make a decision and know you will have a lot of jobs, but do the best at each one to make yourself happy is what I would have told myself. And it seems so obvious, but like, I didn't know that.
No, I don't. I think that's like lived experience. I think that's hard to wrap your head around. Like,
yeah.
At that age without, I don't know, without being a little more seasoned.
Yeah, everything doesn't have to be like the project or the job. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's one of the things too is like, we can't talk about maximizing and satisficing without talking a little bit about comparison. Because if you're not only like comparing yourself to other people, but here's the thing. If you compare your enjoyment or like your satisfaction or whatever to previous experiences, rather than you're like comparing it to your perceived enjoyment of what could be, you're going to be in a much more satisfied place.
Yeah.
It's interesting because some research has suggested that like satisficing and maximizing and other decision-making strategies like personality traits have maybe some strong genetic component and maybe they endure over time. And the genetic influence on decision-making behaviors has been found, you know, of course, there are some fucking classical studies on twins in which, you know, decision-making tendencies are like self-reported by pairs of twins and then compared to like monozygotic and dizygotic, so like identical or fraternal twins. And that implies that like people can be categorized into maximizers and satisficers, with some people landing in between. And to me, this is like, if you were to put this in like big five context, which I would want to, I would want to be like, I would want the criterion to be like maximizer and just like 1 to 100. How much of a maximizer are you? I feel like that's how I would do it if I were in charge, which I'm not. But let me know if you'd like to put me in charge, universe. Anyway, the simulation, call me.
Seriously.
So the distinction between satisficing and maximizing not only differs in the decision-making process, but also in the post-decision evaluation. Oh. I think this is fucking clutch. And this is some of like job stuff I feel like we're talking about, because it's not just like finding the job, but it's how you feel about after you're in the job, right? Mm-hmm. And so maximizers tend to use like a more exhaustive approach to their decision-making process, right? Mm-hmm. They're seeking and evaluating more options than satisficers do in order to ideally like achieve this greater satisfaction. However, satisficers tend to be like relatively pleased with their decisions, whereas maximizers tend to be less happy with their decision outcomes.
Of course.
This is thought to be due maybe, you know, to limited cognitive resources, you know, people maybe have when their options are vast. Maybe it's forcing maximizers to not make an optimal choice, which I'm like, interesting thought here, right? Because maximization, it's unrealistic and usually impossible in everyday life. Like, truly, like, you can't explore everything. And so to that point, maximizers are going to feel oftentimes regretful in their post-choice evaluation. And, you know, even though Schwartz has found that maximizers often earn more, he's also found that they're less satisfied with their jobs. And in fact, maximizers, brace yourself, are more likely to be clinically depressed in general, which I was like, wow, hard.
We're always looking at what's missing.
Yeah, it's I mean, it honestly is like a more in-depth way of maybe nailing down this like my cup half full, half empty kind of thing.
Yeah, and but, not to bring it back constantly to the little people, but I just have to mention that
a big problem
in Matt and Amy in Roloff's that little marriage, world,
yes,
in their marriage was and they are now divorced. Was
Matt
constantly and like without running it by anyone like changing and overhauling and like demoing and rebuilding areas of like their farm and buildings.
Oh yeah, he kept doing shit to the farm.
He had just right feelings about everything, and he was obsessed with like building things like so fast. And then he would be like, like if I could do it again, I would just, you know, I'd do this different. I maybe next year I'll go in and then he's in there like redoing it. It's like they do a remodel on the upstairs of their house a year before they demo all of it and do like a more extensive remodel. So I just had to wrap it back around to the little people. That's all.
Well, it's interesting because there were some other studies too, like really trying to dig into why satisficers were happier than maximizers. And the questions were brought up of like, is it because of social comparisons? So you kind of bring up this like in a different context, but bringing up like, I've decided this is good enough for me, but now I'm like embarrassed that these other people are going to think X, Y, and Z, or these people have this. So like social comparison, Juju, right? Or is it because of like other differences, like the number of options considered, et cetera, et cetera. But research seems to show that maximizers only knew or understood that they got the best by knowing that they did better than everyone else. And here's the thing. You can never be better at everything than everyone else. But that's the thing, is like, maybe you can be like, you know, the best at like a tiny thing, but what about everything else in life, right? And so, as one might, you know, draw some conclusions, this did get me thinking a little bit about athletes, you know, the GOATs, the greatest of all time. And there are a couple people out there who like maybe are considered or were considered at a point in time the best to have like ever done it. Like Lance Armstrong on his like Tour de France, Olympians, like real peak.
Generally.
Olympians for sure, but like Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And like being a maximizer in probably a lot of ways is great for Olympians, athletes in general. And it seems like a lot of folks are that, because nobody like in these sports where they're really chasing stuff is like, you know, I'm setting out to be like pretty good at this. It's like Tiger Woods in like documentaries, they're like show footage of him when, you know, when he's like doing the Masters or something. And they're like, what's your goal? And it's not like, I want to win the contest. He's like, I want to be the greatest person who's ever played golf. Like, seriously.
Lofty goals. And yes.
Truly, but here's the thing, and Tiger is maybe a good example of that, and I would argue Lance Armstrong too. Seems like there's a lot of demons that come with that mindset too.
I was holding my tongue on that and like couldn't figure out the phrasing, but that's exactly what I was thinking too.
It's just, like, maybe you're chasing this and you're maximizing all the things, but like, what do you give up, you know?
A lot of stuff, I
think. And are you satisfied?
I feel like you're giving up, like, for sure, obviously, like, friend and family relationship times, I'm sure, a big part. But also,
definitely,
you're giving up, if you're constantly trying to maximize, if you're like, I want to, if you're Tiger Woods and you're like, I want to be the greatest of all time, you're giving up satisfaction, which, like, is almost its own currency. Like, you're giving up a life where you ever feel, like, relaxed about your status. And that, honestly, like, I wish that I could just feel satisfied all the time, because the times when I do, it's really, really nice.
Right. And I feel like we kind of talked about, I feel like we've kind of flirted in some interesting ways around this satisficing and maximizing without really knowing what it was or digging into it when we have spent time talking about, like, you know, girl-on-girl competition or, you know, comparison in general. I feel like when we talked about quote-unquote peaking on an episode, we really broke down, like, well, it kind of depends on how you define success.
Exactly.
And I guess maybe, like, the empowered version of maximizing and sufficing is trying to figure out, like, I think you have to define a little bit what is like success or what are your standards. And then like the mental Olympics are, you know, trying to figure out how you navigate within those parameters and don't get dissatisfied. And it doesn't mean the goalposts can't move, right? But I think there's really something to trying to, I don't know, figure out what will make you happy and not being bothered when you reach that, but like appreciating it. Do you feel like there have been areas in your life where you have been able to be like, I'm happy with this? Do you know what I mean? Or you haven't felt like I have to keep going?
I don't think I've ever been able to like be completely satisfied with something to the degree of like wanting to keep doing it, but not wanting to keep like working on it. Like I guess like maybe this podcast is a good example. I have definitely like had times where I felt like more pressure to like make it, like at the beginning, like we're trying to like figure it out. We're like, okay, like we want to like push this as hard as we can. And then I think I was able to like relax into feeling like satisfied that I had something to ongoing work at. So I don't even know if that counts because it's like we're still always like striving and working at it. But I'm comfortable and satisfied in the process of that. Like I can relax into like that I'm not like stopping because I'm satisfied, but I can be satisfied with knowing that like this is an ongoing
the cadence, the
right,
rhythm.
Exactly. The... Yes.
That's a nice way to think about it. And it's very like hokey of like, it's not the destination, yeah. It's the journey. But
we don't use the J word anymore.
I'm on a journey. No, but it is. I think there's something to that about being like, well, let me like lean into it, finding like enjoyment in the process. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's satisfaction.
You know, I sound like
that.
A 76ers fan now,
but I also am somebody that has to be like constantly moving and working on stuff. And so I'm learning as I get older that like that is where my satisfaction is. Like it's in like the flow state and it's in.
Well, I mean, that's your life. Yeah. Like your life is not the like final product of anything, you know?
When I'm in Naples, though, just like in retirement.
Oh, live in that retirement.
That will be, mm-hmm. Get back to
peak
me.
Sweatsuit.
We'll do
maybe
a second
you'll be stressed. You know, maybe you'll be stressed like when we're in our 70s because like you can't find the perfect leisure suit. And maybe I'll be upset because I'll never find prescription sunglasses that made me look as hot as the pair that I wanted to steal from your great grandma.
I thought about like stealing those later or seeing if I could like ask about getting them after her death.
I just looked so good in them.
They were very cool. And you guys think that we're exaggerating, but like... They were very cool. They fit her very well.
I was wearing a prism lens sunglass, and I've never been sexier. That's what I'm saying.
That was amazing.
Okay?
Yeah. Anyway, so then but probably when I'm in retirement in my leisure suit, even if I find the perfect one, which there isn't, so I'll have to have many.
your way options. To satisfy is like, I'll just have a variety because none of them will be exactly it.
That is ultimately how I feel, I think. But then I worry, like, I'll probably be really like FOMO heavy and like paranoid about like using like the last chapter of my life like in the best way. So hopefully I can get in front of that one and not like worry away the last chapter of my life. Sorry about that.
You know, I'm trying to just set up myself, hopefully, like, I don't know, like keep my fitness and, you
me
know,
too.
Whatever yeah. in a way that I hope I get to enjoy things. But, you know, I'm not in control
witches.
Of this simulation.
Old witches.
As I'd love to be an old witch. I mean, what if I'm an old witch now? Are you a good witch or a bad witch? Witch. You know, I'll say this. I'm not in control of the simulation. There will be unforeseen circumstances. And I don't know. I feel like my takeaway is to try and satisfies a little bit more, and I think,
but also nothing is forever in the same way that we said like, hey, you'll have many jobs, like,
yeah,
you'll also like get a different phone eventually and like you'll maybe
sure.
like have another relationship, you know, like all everything
well, it's
is
like I hope to evolve for the rest of my life.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm never gonna stop learning and expanding, but I think the area of my life that I probably could be a little bit more of a satisficer in and it would like behoove me, right,
sure.
is probably like maybe in like the dating relationshipal spheres of the world.
Only if you want
that's probably
to.
An area of opportunity. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I hate men, but I mean, sorry to our male listeners,
it's
I don't
okay.
really, I'm very close to many of you, and yet
it's a lowercase h
for sure. Do you have any area that you hope to become more of a satisficer?
Yeah, what I'm gonna do like with my free time. Sometimes I like waste a bunch of my free time by like kind of like putzing and going back and forth about like how I want to use my day when I don't like have to do certain stuff. It's like really hard for me to decide like what I feel like doing, you know, in like an annoying way.
Sure.
But yeah.
No, that makes sense.
That's where
and
I think
I, Yeah, like maybe just like committing to your
just make a own choice. I just need to make a choice with what I'm going to do right now. Get the just energy going toward that, and then we'll see where the rest of the day takes us. Once I do the first thing, then you know, like we're rolling and it's okay. But picking that first thing is tough sometimes.
Truly.
I have written down here, I've been thinking about this as we've been talking. So much of this conversation feels like very heady, like it's very thought heavy.
Sure.
But I would be curious, and I don't know, I'm just like shooting this out there. I would be curious about satisficing in animals, because like I know from a documentary about birds that I watched in middle school.
Of course. That you remember, God bless.
That some birds like cheat on their like spouses. So like there are female birds who will like mate with a male bird that they perceive as like genetically superior, like the most attractive, like theoretically the strongest immune system, like it's the best mate for the offspring. But maybe that bird is like not dependable or like not good at getting food. The female birds will sometimes like secretly mate with that bird and then with another bird like cohabitate, and there's like a secret step parent situation going on.
Oh.
And that to me
sounds
kind of like this, but that's the only example I can think of. But I would just be curious if like animals have like ideals, or if they ever feel like they're like settling.
I think it probably exists on a spectrum, right? Yeah. You know, different intellect across animals. I'm sure that chimps are, you know, they're out there using tools. Yeah. Jane Goodall. Okay. And yeah.
Sign language. Like, that right. Blows my mind.
I mean, it's so truly cool. Incredible. But like, I feel like it's probably a little different with like, you know, maybe some of our domesticated, you know, cats, dogs.
Well, I mean, my dog holds out on eating his dinner until I sprinkle something like that's a little tiny bit of human food garnish on top.
Right. Oh, a garnish of the human foods. Yeah. So, you know, there are all sorts of things there.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of things.
Just wanted to ask about the animals.
Yeah. I think that's something we're thinking about, the animals. Well, on that note, I think it's time to pivot into a verbal game. So, cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
Okay, so I have a touch of a would you rather for you.
Ready?
That I feel like, I don't know, perhaps we'll solve some relationship debates or something, or really strike some chords with people in a way that makes them uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's date night, and every time that maybe you're like gonna go out and like do something fun with like your partner or like on a date or even with friends, I don't care. I don't know your life.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have to constantly maximize about what you're gonna wear or where you're going to eat?
What I'm gonna wear. Because
that's both are kind of crippling.
They are crippling. And I've definitely been in like both boats, like repeatedly. Really hate not knowing
as the wear, problem right? Or as the are you the one trying to maximize, or are you saying you're on the receiving end of someone trying to maximize for one of these things?
Well, definitely all of the above. I've for sure been like getting dressed with like a friend to go to dinner, and they're like really just taking forever because, you know, they can't figure it out. But I think that I would choose to constantly have to maximize what I'm gonna wear, because I think that maximizing where we're going is something that like really inhibits my social experience in a way that what I'm going to wear doesn't as much. And I feel like it affects like the evening more to be like so concerned about where you're going. And it affects like other people because everyone else is going there too.
No, that's a really good call. And I honestly think being on the receiving end, like I would rather deal with someone who was taking a long time to like 100%. I don't know, do their hair, then
because that's like, you know,
they've changed their pants 7 times. Like that's easier than like, I don't know, like maybe let's not go to that place, let's go to this other place.
Then I'm like, well,
honestly,
fuck,
people who can't decide where they want to go, it's like it's really frustrating to me. And I'll say at times some people's high maintenance get ready routines, probably just because I feel like I'm someone who falls I would say, on the lower side of average of get ready time. Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? With that? Is that fair? Quick. Yeah.
I'm the lower side of average. When you and I are doing something, more like
you try to start getting ready before me because you know it'll take longer.
Like, while we're still chatting, like having like a tea or something, I'm like putting my clothes on and like washing my face.
Yeah, I'm a pretty quick get together. So I guess maybe I would rather maximize on that too. Like, and maybe that's just because it's not something I'm wildly maximizing on. But I do,
and we're all not maximizing on it right now.
Absolutely. So maybe not. It feels like,
wow, what a dream.
I've been wearing the same pair of sweatpants for days, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're fully in agreement on this one.
All right. Well, then I have another quick question. This is maybe a strange structure. It's more of a scenario. It's sort of a would you rather. So all right. You are now living in a world where like all skincare products for some reason have been eliminated.
Except, oh my God, I hate everything.
There's like one kind of each thing. And so for whatever reason.
And I have to like pick? Oh God.
You only have $50. And what you're what you're really needing is one moisturizer, which is $30, and one face wash, which is also $30.
Oh.
You have the option, of course, like you can just choose to have just one and then you keep like your remaining cash. Or the way you can get both is to spend your $50, but you also have to like slice your hand open at the store. So like, would you endure like physical pain and a weird experience in order to maximize that?
Do I have to slice my hand open every time I purchase one of these products or just like one time? Like, is this my whole life that, like, I'm like, well, I need a moisturizer. Let me go cut myself.
So, actually, can I, like, take it back just a notch and change this? That was what I originally had written down as a consequence, but I had a better one, and I read the wrong one.
Oh.
Now I'm maximizing this.
Now we're maximizing the game. Okay,
go so ahead. Now I guess we'll keep it in. Anyway. The consequence that will allow you to, for $50, have both of these items for your thirsty, dirty facial skin is...
Gross.
Every time that you want to make this transaction, you'll have to wear the Chick-fil-A uniform for a full day out of the house. Just one day. And so, like, each time, in order to get this deal, that's what you have to do.
Okay.
Do you do it or do you forego one of those products?
Oh, my God. I absolutely wear the Chick-fil-A uniform. Like... It's fine. I could like one day and I don't even have to buy a new cleanser or moisturizer monthly. So it's like, maybe it's like six times a year I have to spend a day in the Chick-fil-A uniform. And like, I don't know, I could make it work. Like, it would honestly, maybe I would turn it into like some sort of weird performance art. Like, maybe I would like get really like get on a megaphone and scream about atheism while dressed in a Chick-fil-A uniform. Like, you can't know.
Oh, wow.
Maybe this is my platform. Thank you for spinning and then I have that. Great skin. Then I have great skin while I'm doing it so people want to listen to me because beauty is privilege, okay?
Wow. Wow. I didn't even have anything to say. You really wrapped that up tight.
Listen, thank you so much. Would you not? Would you do it differently?
No, I would do it. Not be? I would do it.
Okay.
Would you do the hand slice? Like, you have to do it at the counter with payment.
I feel like that's like a little violent towards the cashier.
I mean, they've asked for it, but yeah, it is.
Oh, they're asking me for my blood? Like, they're like the you must make the sacrifice? Payment.
Yeah.
Oh, I would probably do it.
Yeah, I think I would too.
Yeah, I mean, which like, wow, vanity. I'm like, oh yeah, I would slice my hand open for moisturizer. Yeah,
if
I
there's
would.
No other moisturizer like that exists in the world for you to get.
I mean, it's so dark. And honestly, if I had to choose between moisturizer and face wash, I would choose the face wash. But if, because I feel like I could get more, it would be easier to be creative about a good moisturizer. Mm, you know, I could witch some shit up in my laboratory bathroom.
Sure, yeah.
But I just, if I have the option to slice my hand open as a form of payment, yeah, I'm on board. Sure, why not?
Amazing. Well, we've brought it back to blood magic somehow.
Somehow, next week on Blood Magic Menstruation, the podcast. Okay. Well, on that note, as always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And I mean, truly, I would love to hear your maximizing and satisficing dilemmas, or if you think you're like really one and not the other, or if there's an area you're trying to like change. I'm here for the intel.
Yeah, we'd also like to hear about your multiple wives if you have them. I don't
absolutely know. If you have more than one wife and or husband, listen, we don't discriminate. Keep us posted, let us know, and toodles.
Bye.